This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is Running Out of Money Part 2, or 10 Tips to Prevent Running Out of Money. But before we get started here, just a couple of quick announcements. First thing is I just want to encourage you guys. There's so many great things happening right now with a lot of our listeners. I've been hearing all kinds of stories, first-time investors, people who are growing their portfolios, just neat stuff. And I'm trying to capture some of these great stories, too, on our show here. And I've featured some folks that our listeners that are doing really well investing. So I'd like to share their stories so that you can hear step-by-step some of the neat things that are happening out there. So don't be discouraged. There's a lot of stuff out there that tries to discourage us, but we really just keep moving forward. I know I keep mentioning that a lot on this show, just keep moving forward, but I mean it. That's what you got to keep doing. You just you learn from the little bumps and you just keep moving and you will do what you set out to do. Real quick announcements here. Last month of our amazing contest here. It's going to be done at the end of this month here. So if you want to participate, you go to iTunes, subscribe, and give us a review, and your name will be entered into the bucket that we'll pull a name for to some of our cool prizes, like getting your own pilot podcast show, to 4 hours of coaching from yours truly, to some other things that just haven't been announced officially yet, but they will be. So stand by. Other things that are going on. Big move here. I will be officially parting company with my indie property manager that I've had for 2+ years here at the end of the year. It was an educational experience for me. There were definitely some good things and some that not so good things, but it was a good decision to shift. And we have a new firm on board that'll be coming in, already starting to do stuff here, even though they're not officially on board yet. So that's a good positive thing. Maybe I'll zero in a little bit more on that in later episodes. Also, closed circuit TV. Okay, total double thumbs up here. I put that in my property, my 22 unit, and it has proven to be a great asset for problem tenants, for people that aren't tenants that are visiting the building that are problems. Just been really good things. So I would highly encourage you, if you're an out-of-state investor and you've got a property that isn't quite big enough to warrant on-site property management, get closed circuit TV that you can look at on your phone, you can look at on your computer, and you can go back and look at certain days and times and stuff. Good stuff. We're adding another Airbnb unit also on the 22 unit. Looking real forward to that because it has just been really, really productive and lucrative. We're also looking at possible Airbnb arbitrage in other cities, and that's where you don't actually buy a property, but you rent a furnished unit or a unit that you put furniture in, and you sort of sublet it to those that come in from Airbnb. I'll talk about more than that later too. We are getting really close to some very good potential deals here before year end. So, hey, say a prayer for us. We're hoping to land that apartment deal before year end. We're busy writing our 2019 strategic plan. So I hope you guys are doing the same thing as we look at our 2018 goals and how we did or didn't do. And that's a real valuable resource for us, like sort of a living blueprint on how to do things right. I would encourage you to do that. Well, let's jump into our show here. Running Out of Money Part 2, or 10 Tips to Prevent Running Out of Money. And last time, now I know we've had a couple of shows since then, but we did go over quite a bit in the first episode, how to get started, where you get the money from to begin investing, the power and the pitfalls of leverage. I also shared an example of sort of a first purchase property to illustrate the incredible return you can get just maybe with one single family home to get started. All the examples I used were actually single family homes, although I still have some single family homes. My focus is primarily multifamily. And if you want to know why I switched, you can listen to episode 090. If I had $100,000 to invest in real estate, that's the name of the episode. And it talks about various scenarios, buying a single family home, buying multiple single family homes with down payments, and also talking about buying a multifamily property. So running out of money, I think, is a really, really important thing. And the reason why I'm saying that is that, gosh, too many investors have run into this problem where you're either building your portfolio and you run out of money, or you're, you know, you've already got the funds coming in, but all of a sudden you need to do, you know, roof repair or something serious like that, and you don't have the money to cover it. So there's a lot of situations like that can happen. You know, when I shop for properties, the best deals are the off-market deals. Those are the ones you want to look for, especially if you want to pay under market price. And they're usually distressed situations one way or another, and there's a ton of different types of scenarios for a distressed property. But one of the most common distressed properties are people, for example, in the multifamily space who buy a value add property that they're going to rehab, bring it up to par, increase rents, you know, do all that stuff, and hopefully be able to sell it year 3, 5, 7, what have you. Well, a lot of times what happens is they run out of money right at the rehab stage. So maybe they've rehabbed half of the units, but they can't afford to do them. And now the investors are growing impatient because their time frame that they had initially has already expired, and they're still desperately trying to get money to fund the rest of the rehab. Investors are putting pressure on them, and they finally say, okay, look, let's just sell it as it is. Let's try to get our original investment back so that we don't lose money on this proposition. And, you know, that can happen, and it does happen. And that is a sort of an ideal situation to step in as a purchaser. But for somebody in that position, it's not such a great place to be. That's sort of one of the prime areas, you know, that you look at is when you purchase properties, to be able to estimate things as accurately as you can, so you're not stuck in that situation. And it's not always the person buying, it's not always their fault. Sometimes you have maybe an overzealous contractor who kind of stretched the truth a little bit to lowball and win the bid. But now all of a sudden the true numbers are coming out and you're going, wait a minute, this is not what you agreed to. And, you know, you could fire them, try to find somebody else, but you find out that that there's nobody that can come near to the original estimate, and boom, you're stuck in that situation. So it's not always the buyer's fault in that case. You have to be really, really strategic and smart in your numbers there, and also, you know, have an experienced team with you to avoid that. So, you know, most people, as they're trying to build their portfolio, okay, you have a certain amount of money you start with, and then you have to allow money for rehab, capital improvements, upgrades, repositioning, those types of things. And, you know, you use that money to really sort of, as you start building, you're sort of leveraging to a certain degree to try to move into another property a little faster, okay? You can avoid the sort of that leveraging out situation. And this is a problem, another one where people run out of money, is they just kind of leverage themselves out of the game, where they have a lot of loans that they owe. They've borrowed and cashed out on this property to buy that property. And then that property picks up some equity and they cash out, refi. And, you know, you just keep doing this same scenario. So there's ways you can avoid that. Leverage is great if it's the right market and you have all of the right elements in place. But you can also get stuck in leverage too. So you want to be careful. And the one way to avoid it is just to purchase properties, for example, in cash, just to pay, you know, a full amount for that property, and you begin to just draw the income. You buy a $1 million apartment building, for example, and you know, maybe it's generating $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 per month cash flow after expenses, and you could just basically live off of that. Boom, that you've done it. You've taken maybe it's your whole nest egg or maybe part of your nest egg to purchase that. You're not going to have that problem with leveraging. You're not going to have the problem that comes in recession. With recessions, you might have to lower your prices, plus you also lose equity, so you can't borrow against it, and you avoid a lot of that trap that sometimes leverage brings in. Or you might want to just try a more conservative approach where you still leverage a little bit, but it's only on some properties. So you'll pay cash for some properties, others you'll finance. It may take 10, 15, 20 years to reach your goal, but you don't have that reliance upon leverage, which is a short way to grow very quickly in ideal markets. So what does that sort of classic leverage approach look like? It's, you buy a property with as little cash as possible. You're just doing a 20% down or somewhere around there with a mortgage. You do improvements to the property. You increase the rents. NOI goes up, which means the value goes up. When the value goes up, so does the equity. And then you do cash out refi to pull money out of the property to buy more properties, and rinse and repeat. As you buy these new properties, you do the exact same thing. Well, that can work if you are on sort of the upside or an early upside of a market. But if you're up at the top of that bubble, or you're getting close to that top of the bubble, you might want to think a little differently. And so you've got to look at buying right, financing right, rehabbing right, have the right team in place. And you need contingent alternative plans, A, B, C, and D, and so forth, should things go awry. But generally, when things are booming, people just move really quickly in this way, and you really don't, you usually don't have problems. But, we are right now in a situation where, we're approaching a market correction. And so leverage isn't really your friend in all cases there. So to keep this train growing so you can grow your portfolio, you really always, need to depend, especially when you're doing leverage, on the prior property's performance. But what happens, though, when that train has a wreck? So you've got a train wreck here, and it could be because, boom, there was a major market correction or recession. The local market crashes, which, might be separate from what's going on nationally or internationally. And then your properties start to lose value, so you can't pull the equity to buy more properties, right? Maybe you lose your high-paying job, and you were contributing a lot to this process, whether it's by contributing part of your salary to buy properties or to do improvements. Sometimes natural disasters hit, floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, and your insurance wasn't quite adequate to cover your losses there. Maybe you can't get cheap loans anymore. So it's going to be really hard to make those numbers work if all of a sudden, loan rates go up significantly. And then you've got the old scenario like I just talked about where you just pay too much for your rehab. So, the train comes to a resulting halt all of a sudden in these situations, and your cash flowing locomotive becomes a cash sucking black hole that's costing more than it's generating. And you don't want to be in that position. So you need to really, especially now, invest wisely, especially as we're approaching a market correction. So I'm going to give you just 10 quick tips here. And again, I could probably write a lot more, but I think these are some of the key ones that will help you not get stuck in that situation. Number one, write and follow a strategic investment plan. This is really important, or a strategic business plan. Every successful real estate investor has a business plan that they work off. A good plan outlines your mission, vision, goals, and strategies. It should be a living plan, I believe, that you can regularly revise and optimize for shifts in the market or other changes impacting your plan. Maybe the cost of lumber went up or something too that can impact your rehab plans and things like this. So you're constantly, keeping it more up to date. The more you can refine it, the more efficient your operations will be. Your strategic plan or your strategic business plan is your blueprint for success. So you need to take it seriously. And that's something I'm talking about now, as I did earlier in the announcement section here. We're working on our 2019 plan. Number two, get investment partners. You know, get people on your side, or people in your, maybe they're GPs in your syndication, or maybe it's just a partner you're working with that has access to funds that can help you out in a financial crunch. Of course, you know, it might increase their equity position, or you may have to pay interest or something on those funds, but you can get them quickly and you can help overcome potential problems when you're running out of money. So it could be a bank, could be an investor, a partner that can help you to finish that rehab project, cover unexpected expenses, or maybe do a necessary marketing campaign. Number three, double your goal, okay? A lot of people have, you know, this is our break even here. Well, I don't like break evens. They make me nervous. And I would double whatever our supposed break even is, so that that'll be your goal, to be able to have that extra income. If your break even is $50,000 a month or whatever it may be, then make it $100,000. And if you don't use that funds, great. They go into your reserves and you're building up your reserves. So, you know, there's always going to be factors that you just can't anticipate that you need to be prepared for. And as I mentioned, just talked about, number four, build a large reserve. The bigger reserve, the I think you're in a good spot. For example, you know, most reserves, people say, well, let's have 6 months of expenses covered. Well, I would say 9 months or 12 months. Again, I would over prepare, especially as we approach market correction, possible recession. I also say, you know, that these funds, if you have all these funds sitting there too, if there is a market correction, I would, you know, take part of that money, and especially as it's grown up way beyond 6, 9, or 12 months coverage of expenses, and look at it as what I call an ROA account, which is Recession Opportunity Account, an account that allows you to buy bargain properties during a recession. Okay, so what do the wealthiest investors do? What do they do? Well, they buy when everyone else is selling, and they sell when everyone else is buying, right? Are you in a position to do that now if the recession hits next week, next month, a year from now? It's a good thing to think about, because if you can get the properties that are, you know, really going to be the bargains there, that might be the way to do it. Number five, buy every property at a discount. Even today, most people say it's impossible to find under market deals. Well, I beg to differ. There are discounted properties out there, and I know people that buy them, and it's not, they're not easy to find. Not like, you know, when the market was just zooming. You don't get as many pocket listings from brokers nowadays, because there's a lot of international and institutional funds out there that are buying properties for over offering price. So you try to, you know, do your own direct marketing, direct to seller, and try to find those, become an expert on finding distressed properties and owners. Number six, accelerate mortgage pay downs. You know, Kiyosaki says mortgages are good debt, but that doesn't mean that it's the preferred solution. It just means that it's a necessary place to be to grow real assets for leverage and so forth. But the reality is, it's better to own properties outright, I believe. I love the tax breaks, and I love, you know, the some of the advantages there. But overall, you know, I'd rather not have the debt, and I would just, you know, get the straight cash out. And it just seems to be a lot better. Number seven, buy properties in cash. Now, if you can do this, it's good, especially if you're over 50. You don't want to get strapped into a lot of debt, you know, especially as you're moving into retirement or you're already in retirement. So if you can buy properties for cash, do it. And a lot of people don't want to do this because they're thinking, that's the nest egg. I can't touch my nest egg. But, you know, think about what is that nest egg earning you? And can that, whatever earnings you're getting, can that beat real estate? Real estate is not only a safe investment, but it also has good yields, better than a lot of stuff out there. So, you know, look at that. Or maybe you want to do the, like I mentioned earlier, the idea of, part cash, part finance. But when you're 59 and a half, you can, you can start taking it out of your self-directed. So you could do all this investing within your self-directed account, IRA or 401k, and you get the tax advantages there too. So think about it, okay? Also, last week I did a show on how to retire in 5 years, actually the week before last, and I showed you how you could put in as little as $150 from your nest egg to set up a plan that sets you up to be financially independent in 5 to 6 years. Okay, number 8, relentlessly pursue reduced expenses. This I can't emphasize enough how important it is to really try to keep your expenses down. Do you have the best rate on your insurance? Have you tried to petition the county for lower property tax rates? Make friends with cheapskate landlords and use their best expense reducing ideas, low flush toilets, faucets, energy efficient properties, do a RUBS program, all these different ways to reduce funds. I would say become an obsessive miser, okay? You don't do this at the expense of your tenants, but you certainly can do it in such a way where you can find a way to be able to, reduce expenses and make a great place for folks to live as well. Become a loan expert. I think that this is really an important one. For me, if you can understand the requirements for loans and what rates are and who has the best loans and how to get those loans and qualify for those loans, that's going to be significant because that is a big expense item, even though it wouldn't technically be called expense. It's called debt service, but it is something you have to pay. And if you can pay less, out of your monthly income, you've got more cash flow. The last, I've got 10, 11 here, but okay. One I've already said, and I'll just say it again. And that is number 10, don't over leverage. That's just a given, especially in today's market. And the number 11 here, which really could be my number 10, but because I've been saying don't over leverage here. But last one is just, and this is a last resort because, it's not good to go into debt if you don't have to, especially debt that you can't write off. But, to get debts that, have lines of credit and backup should you run into a problem, or maybe you only have to come up with $50,000 to fix a problem. And, you have a personal loan, you take a personal loan out or a hard money loan or a HELOC or maybe even 0% credit cards, to name a few. But those are good backup items, but I'd say only in the worst cases and where you're really stuck. Well, that is it. Those are my top 10 there, top 11. I hope that'll be helpful to you because this is an important factor. You don't want to run out of money and, watch that train come to a total slam, crash, boom, stop. You want to be able to overcome some of those tight periods and be real wise and frugal with the funds that you have. Well, that's it for today. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today, including any links that I mentioned to other shows or other information here, can be found at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And look for the episode entitled Running Out of Money Part 2 or 10 Tips to Prevent Running Out of Money. Until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.